I'm Bay, and you're listening to Bay Baltimore, a weekly pop culture and society podcast recorded in downtown Baltimore. This episode, I watched you people, and I think I want to talk about it, but first, Netflix is you people. I think I want to talk about it. So a lot has happened. You've been on TikTok. You've been on Twitter. You've been on social media. You've watched regular TV. You've watched all the stuff, especially if you're in the United States. And you know that, Tyre Nichols, departed this earth under tragic circumstances. And I won't say more than that because I recognize that this is a tough subject for me to talk about, not only because it's tough. It's tough for me to talk about because I don't want to talk about it like, oh, it's just one more, because that's irreverent, too irreverent for something like this, and it's tasteless. On the other hand, I want to get out of the way and allow other people who are on the ground in Memphis holding the department accountable. I want to get out of the way and allow them amplify their voices, and certainly other smart thinkers who engage in this conversation in a meaningful way. But I will say this, speaking about the tragedy, senseless death of Tyre Nichols, I want to take a slight detour, but it's still adjacent to the conversation. So I have not seen the video. I don't intend to. My husband has not seen the video. He does not intend to. But we have seen a lot of media about it. We have been engaging about the conversation. We have been engaging in conversations about what happened and just where we are as a country, the United States overall. And two things struck me. Number one, I don't think people who are tired of talking about blackness and how it's policed, I don't think you truly recognize how much black people in the United States, but if we're being honest and taking a step back, black people in the African diaspora, how much we are policed depending on where you are and what has happened. And sometimes it's indirectly. Let me explain. So in 2020, in the wake of Breonna Taylor, in the wake of losing George Floyd, and in the middle of the pandemic, still, that holiday, that Christmas holiday, we wanted to do something. Oh, no, it was 21. 2021, we wanted to do something. We wanted to do something as a family unit. We wanted to travel somewhere. So we somehow or another, I suggested Indianapolis, Indiana. We ended up, Louisville, Kentucky, my bad, Louisville, Kentucky. Hadn't ever been, wanted to go to see the Muhammad Ali Museum. When we got there, my daddy made a remark saying, because we ended up, what we ended up doing is getting getting a house, renting out a house, and the family, we just kicked it. We just kicked it real hard. Did a few things around town, engaged, have fun, but mostly just wanted to be together. And so we just kicked it. Anyway, and I can remember us going, I think, to Walmart or something like that. And my daddy making a comment. I think we was like getting groceries or something for like, I think we made Christmas dinner. And so we went to the grocery store to get some fixings for the dinner. Anyway, I can remember my dad saying something to the effect of, let's not stick around too much. The equivalent of whatever he said was, it resonated with me as if he said, it's too hot over here. Meaning it's too much activity, it's still too much, it's too sensitive over, not sensitive, it's just, it's too tight over here, too much attention still, let's not be over here, let's go back to the house. In other words, him acknowledging that Breonna Taylor had lost her life very tragically, and there was still some unreadiness, some unease in the city, and let's not be naive, let's be smart about what we do and watch your surroundings. In only the way my daddy could say it, but that's essentially what he was saying. Flash forward to this year, 2023, and I, after a long day of crunching numbers and doing reports and stuff, grant reports, you know, if you work in the nonprofit field, you know, this is 6 months. Some of your grants are ending, depending on what cycle they are, they're ending in March. Quarterly reports are due, all of this stuff. There's mid-year reporting, mapping, all of this. So I'm just crunching data, blah, 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 blah. And anyway, you know how you can get when you do a certain task and you're just droning on and on and on and on about it. Sometimes you need to take a step back to get some clarity on menial tasks. Like, you don't know how to handle a simple task because you need to think about it, because you haven't been thinking about simplistic tasks. You've been thinking about complicated stuff. Like, anyway, you get it. I'm not the only one that has a hard time transitioning after spending hours working on a subject. Anyhow, and so I knew what I was intending to say, but what I ended up, I was talking about my birthday and I was planning, talking about what I wanted to do for my birthday. I intended to say one thing. What I ended up saying was this to my husband. Literally, while I was finishing up the last equation or whatever numbers I was running, I asked hubby, who was sitting next to me, it was late, it was after five, whatever. And I said, so where do you want to go for my birthday? And it was one of those things that you say, but the person that you're speaking to, there's either a pause, the pause is too long, or it's like unnatural. And so it's enough of a pause to make you engage the person. Like, I know you heard me, you sitting right next to me. You do not have your headphones in, you can hear me. Anyway, so I looked up from my computer and I turned to, he was sitting next to me, so I turned to him and I said, so, I guess he was wait, I didn't say it, he spoke first. I guess he was waiting to make eye contact with me. Also, he can repeat exactly what I said back to him, but you know how he repeated it, right? He repeated it slow, like, I can't believe you. Did you hear what you said? And so he repeated it back to me. What do I want? Where do I want to go for your birthday? You know, like that. And then I snapped out of it. I was like, oh, what I wanted to say was, I have an idea of where I want to go, but how do you feel about that? Because I like to celebrate my birthdays. I'm an introvert by nature. I am an extrovert at work because that's the nature of my job, and I actually like the work that I do. So I will act like I'm an extrovert for my job and for anything that I enjoy doing. I will be social. I will act like I just love people and talk to people and just love being around people if I love what I do. But at the end of the day, I really don't like to be in crowds. I really don't like to be in big groups. I like to be in smaller groups where I'm only talking to a few people. And you know what? Even that has a time limit, because at the end of the day, I would rather be watching TikTok laid up in the bed or at my home doing absolutely nothing and being totally fine with it. And so you think the pandemic, you would have thought the pandemic, the early days of the pandemic would have been heaven for me. They were not. That was too much disconnection. I didn't like that. And it wasn't self-imposed, which also frustrated me. But anyway, and so I like to be in big groups. So what I really wanted to say was, you know, what would be a cool place to bring our friends and us together to celebrate my birthday? That's what I meant to say. But what I ended up saying is, where do you want to go for my birthday? And so after we got through that little piece, I started to recommend places to go. I said Toronto, because even though I don't particularly like Drake right now, because of what he said about Meg in his song, you can go try to play like he ain't really mean it like that. My husband is still a fan of him. And so wouldn't it be cool if to be fair, if I ran into Drake, I do not think I would chew his ear off. You know what I mean? I think I'd be starstruck just like any other person. And beside the fact, I'm still real, real upset that he was giving out $100 bills right around where me and the hubby, our hotel was for Christmas last year. I ain't forgot. Or in 20, and what was it? What Christmas was that? Was that Christmas 2021? Christmas 21, he gonna give out $100 bills right around the corner from where we was. Anyway, I'm letting that go. Well, I'm not letting that go, because if we go back to Toronto, I want to see Drake now, because I feel like he owes me that. Anyway, so I threw out Toronto, but I was like, you know, what about, I started to think about places I hadn't been, or at the very least, I hadn't been in a long time. And so throughout Martha's Vineyard, Vegas, what about going to Mexico, you know, places in Mexico, I don't think Los Angeles came up, but I actually think I might. Anyway, that's probably on the list. I also threw out Memphis, because it has been a long time since I've been to Memphis. And again, this was still toward the end of my day. I was still trying to snap out of work brain. And my husband said, no, it's too hot still. Harkening back to what my dad said when we were in Louisville, be smart. Let's make sure that, you know, let's get what we need and get back to where we are. It's still too hot out here. It's still too tight, it's too tense out here. And my husband saying what he said, it's too hot right now for Memphis, maybe some other time. I just got to thinking, boy, black people who talk about race a lot truly don't know how just indirectly unrest and strife, known violence against black folks at the hand of police at a city you don't even live near will impact whether or not you're even going to go around in that vicinity, or even a year after the incident was exposed, how careful you'll be in that city. Like, you will never look at the city as, you'll never look at that place the same. And that's of the places that you know. Never, keep in mind, there's always a level of, I'm from Baltimore. I'm not from, but you know what I mean. I live in Baltimore. Baltimore is representative of many urban cities across the globe that have high crime, sometimes higher than others, according to their size. Baltimore is a big mid-sized city. We are smaller than New York, smaller than Miami, smaller than a lot of urban cities. We're just tightly packed in here. There's a smaller surface area for us to be, so that it appears that it's a much more densely populated city than it actually is. Well, more populous city than it actually is, because we're so dense, so tightly packed in here. The city limits aren't super big, or yeah, super big as compared to other cities. I actually think that Kansas City has about the same amount of people in it, but Kansas City doesn't seem as populated as Baltimore because it's spread out, some more surface area. It's more, the city limits are wider. Anyway, so again, I live in Baltimore. I'm no stranger to sticky situations. Things happen all the time around Baltimore, too much to our chagrin, right? And does not go unnoticed, and very much working to hold the leadership, especially police leadership, accountable. But I'm not a shrinking violet. That said, it's one... What am I trying to say? The ways in which Black folk, poor people, brown people often adjust things in their life to account for the trauma that they may face, or that they want to avoid in a certain space. You couldn't imagine what that's like unless you are Black or brown or poor. And from a marginalized community, you couldn't possibly understand how much situations that happen states away in the same country can impact you where you are. And so that's why we still talk about this stuff. Because again, I would love to go to Memphis. It has been 20 years since I've been to Memphis. When I was a child, I had very good memories of a road trip that took me through Memphis with some of my cousins. I would like to go back as an adult and see where B.B. King hung out. You know what I mean? Rosetta Tharpe hung out. All those great Black blues musicians. I would love to go to Memphis and hang out there. Can't do it right now. It's too hot out there. And again, what am I really saying? The illusion of safety. I'm not that naive because I'm Black and in America. I'm not that naive, but you get what I mean. We can't go there because it's that the facade of safety, the facade of, oh, you know, Black folks can come and we can hang out and we can chill. That's gone now. Now, mind you, I'm not trying to make it seem like Black folks can't live in Memphis. What I'm saying is, you've reminded me that right now, that ain't no place to vacation. That ain't no place to hang out for me. Because of the reminder. And I'm not being crass when I'm saying what happened to Tyree is a reminder of the reality of living in the United States. What I'm saying is that facade is gone now, and we live in delusion, Americans, or excuse me, folks living in the United States, we live in delusion. And unfortunately, being Black in America, you don't often have the luxury of living in delusion, the delusion of safety. And so anyway, but again, I want to lean to other. So that's the first thing that I wanted to say. The second thing I wanted to say is I'm really tired of people taking incidents like what happened, the senseless tragedy that happened to Tyree, and making about something completely different, but trying to say that it's adjacent. Let me explain. Mark Lamont Hill is a very famous member of Kappa Alpha Psi Fraternity Incorporated, one of the 9 historically Black Greek letter organizations. He is very smart, makes very good observations about things. I often agree with him that he made a very smart, very wise comment about Black Greek letter organizations who are very much gender-based cannot discriminate based on gender or sexual identity or orientation, identity orientation. But it's a sorority at its core. These sororities are for people who identify as women, and the fraternities are for, at its core, people who identify as men. And one of the things that he said is, now mind you, all of the Black Greek letter organization world, every single one of our organizations has someone who identifies as non-binary. They probably did not identify as non-binary before they became a member, but we do have folks who identify as non-binary now, folks who identify as queer, folks who, we have that in our organization now, our organizations now. I dare say we probably also already have folks who identify as trans. They're just stealth. They're stealth because they know that they could. People are ignorant. Some members of the organization are ignorant while the organization. I can't speak for the organizations, but I can say that some members of these organizations are ignorant, and the people, if found out, could face ridicule. And so I imagine there are some people who are stealth in organizations who are trans. Mark Lamont Hill made a comment saying that we need to provide space for people who want to be a part of our organizations, which is true, but specifically in the conversation or the context of trans-identifying people, if that person who may have been assigned male at birth identifies as a woman, they should be able to seek membership in a sorority. If that person who was assigned female at birth identifies as male, they should be able to join a fraternity. Again, I'm sure we already have stealth members in our organizations anyway. Because at the end of the day, your orientation, your sexual orientation, your identity pales in comparison to the service that you're providing, to the money you're putting into the organizations. Because at the end of the day, these are service organizations that are based, whose whole being, reason for existing, is to serve the Black community, the community at large, but the Black community first. So pick up that broom. Go bag them groceries. That's what we need to be doing. That's what we need to be focused on. Not focused on whether or not when a sexual identity that was assigned to them at birth. That doesn't make any sense. That doesn't make any sense. And there's more conversations around this too, but he made a very smart comment about that, and he used his organization as an example, Kappa Alpha Psi. Anyway, and so I agreed with that conversation, and I know that it's a very controversial conversation, and I know a lot of people don't even agree with what I'm saying. Nevertheless, we can't discriminate against a person. We should be welcoming of everyone who wants to come through our doors and represent our organization well. Like, that should not be. Sorority is a gender-based organization. Fine. Trans women are women. So what's the problem? This ain't the army. So like, anyway, but that's a whole nother conversation for another day. And I really do want to be clear. I'm not suggesting that the organizations themselves in any way are rejecting what I'm saying. What I am saying, though, is that there are members, and probably a lot of them, who reject it. And I just don't understand why you would gatekeep something so precious if these individuals meet the standards for membership, are quality in their service and what they bring to the community. I have heard of a couple of cases where someone could have, one in particular that I'm thinking about, where that person could have been extremely beneficial to that chapter because of their connections in the community, real connections and resources in the community. And because of bigotry and hatred, they lost a good opportunity because you just want to hype it anyway. And that person truly would have given them their very best, unlike the bums that they actually brought in. That's beside the point. Anyway, but whatever. I know that there are, again, it's not at the organizational level, it's at the chapter level. Well, actually, I won't speak for all of that because I know that there are certain organizations that might have some language put in place, and thank God that that's not my organization. Anyway, I'll leave it there. But Mark Lamont Hill had very smart things to say over the years. And so when I saw a clip of him talking about that image that's going around social media right now of the police officers, the perpetrators of the crime against Tyre Nichols, and that particular image of three of them having the Omega Q over them, the purple, you know, the purple one with the gold outline and the red, the red lightning bolt, identify them as members of Omega Psi Phi Fraternity Incorporated. And the video, I don't know if it was 30 seconds, must have been, I was probably more than that, but I only listened for 30, 40 seconds at best, for reasons that will become clear in a second. But he started out by saying the same thing that every Black Greek Letter Organization member that I know has been saying, that, okay, so you identified three of these members as being members of Omega Psi Phi. Omega Psi Phi did not do that. These individuals, Omega Psi Phi did not do that to Tyre Nichols. Those three individuals that are members of the organization did that to him. So I just don't understand what the point of putting that imagery up there. It made about as much sense as showing the photos of the police officers in their dress clothes and then their dress uniform, and then flash forward a couple of weeks and now we're seeing them in the mug shots. Like, which one is it? Keep them in their uniform. They didn't commit this crime or maybe they were in their street clothes, but make sure that you get them in a picture with their badge on, because that's the important piece here. That's the important piece that we need to see. Because when you strip them of the identity that they had on that allowed them to act as recklessly as they did, now you're just punishing those individuals, not them and the system that made them. Because that's what we really need to be doing, but that's another conversation. But actually, that leads me to my point. So Mark Lamont Hill began to talk about the fact that he separate these people and their actions from the organization, but then immediately pivoted and then blamed the fact that Omega Psi Phi and all of the Divine Nine organizations, but he was focusing on Omega Psi Phi, saying that hazing culture is enabled at least these three members to do what they did to Tyre Nichols. And I have two things to say to that. The first thing I'll say is every single one of the Divine Nine organizations, NPHC, historically Black Greek letter organizations, all of the organizations signed something like a compact in 1990 denouncing hazing, because members had died behind trying to gain their membership in these organizations. And I'm talking about every last one of the nine. All you have to do is go back. We've heard situations where in some of the sororities, women haven't died, but they've been subjected to some pretty bad situations that you wouldn't even dream of. Very illegal, highly illegal. And so all of the Divine Nine organizations, and I'm quite sure the Greek letter organizations at large, signed compacts denouncing hazing in 1990, or around that time too, but that's when the NPHC did it. And from there, all of those organizations adopted practices and organized ways of bringing in new members in an effort to minimize risk and eliminate hazing, because that day, the seven founders of Sigma Gamma Rho Sorority Incorporated were not hazed. Why should you be? What would have been the purpose of me being hazed? Kubina McClure was not hazed. Vivian Irie Marbury was not hazed. Bessie Mae Downing-Rose Martin was not hazed. Anyway, I'm not going to go through all of that. Anyway, you know what I mean. Mary Lou Allison Gardner Little did not haze any of her members, nor was she hazed. Anyway. And so these organizations have things in place, and they mean so much business that if you, baby, they have entire legal teams whose job it is to investigate internally. I know people make jokes about them. I know that people think that these organizations don't do anything. When I tell you, I have a member in my chapter, my homegirl, who has been a part of my region's fact-finding team. They're thorough. And I know it's just not just Sigma Gamma Rho. All of the organizations are thorough because we mean business. Our organizations mean business, even if we got rogue members who do not. Undergraduate alumni, you've been out of school for years and you still trying to relive your glory days. Or you didn't become a member in undergrad at all. And so you're trying to relive something, or not relive, you're trying to manufacture something you never even went through and put somebody through it. That's the kind of fools that engage in that sort of stuff. And yes, I'm saying fools because that's what it is. It's folly. It's foolish. Because again, none of our founders were hazed. But what did happen was our founders had to endure a whole lot of hatred and racism, which was why these organizations were founded in the first place. Specifically, Sigma Gamma Rho Sorority Incorporated was a professional organization at first, founded to support teachers, Black women teachers in racist old Indianapolis, Indiana, home of the Ku Klux Klan. So anyway, the conversation, and Mark Lamont Hill is not the only one that used this tragic, terrible situation to somehow, because those members, those police officers were a member of a Divine Nine organization, used it to talk about Black Greek life. And I'm like, baby, you could have talked about that any other day and for any other reason. You did not need to attach it to a tragedy like that. That's trifling. That was very trifling of Mark to do that. I don't even know what else he said or if he's retracted it or clarified, and I don't care. He knew what he was doing when he brought it up. That was foolish. If you were articulate enough to say that these men do not represent their organization, then you are articulate enough and thoughtful enough not to try to ham-fist this argument that hazing culture is what enabled. That's what he ended up saying, hazing culture, specifically with the men of Omega Psi Phi, enabled them to treat this other Black man like nothing, because that's what they did. And that's what they do in hazing, right? I'm not arguing how terrible hazing is. What I'm saying is, what the heck? You missed the real point by a mile. You know what the real point is? Yeah, we can talk about fraternity, but the fraternity that I really want to talk about is the Fraternal Order of Police. The reason why these Black men felt empowered to manufacture a story, even while they were intruding or appearing to infringe on Tyree's rights and as they were assaulting him. That's the fraternity I wish he were talking about. Because that's what enabled him. Because again, for all of the cases we do see that do make the news, there are a whole bunch that do not. There are a whole bunch that absolutely do not. I can remember when I first moved here, I did a tabling session at a government organization in the area, a government health organization in the area. And it was a slow period. It was a slow point in the open house period that we were in. And a woman next to me starts telling a story of how this police officer was moonlighting as a security guard just to pick up some extra money. And he got scared. Somebody scared him, and his natural reaction was to pull his gun and aim it in the direction of what scared him. And she just laughed and laughed and laughed. And in that moment, I said, boy, oh boy, you have no idea what you're saying. So you think it's funny that a person's natural reaction when they got scared was not to protect themselves, orient themselves, and see what's the matter, but to grab a deadly weapon that could end someone's life, especially if at point blank range. You thought it was funny that he got so scared that he pulled his gun. And when I'm talking about scared, I'm talking about like boo scared, like somebody scared him like that. And his natural reaction was to pull his gun. Now, I know what you might be saying. Well, he might have been living with, that person might have been living with PTSD or what have you. Probably. I'm not going to take that from that person. But I don't think it's funny that a person's natural reaction is to pull a gun. I think that's serious. When somebody's boo, scaring you, that's some serious stuff that needs some attention. And she was telling the story like it was so natural. Like, should anyone have a gun on them? It's natural for you to pull it when somebody plays a prank on you. And so it's little stuff like that. Like, I have... That was the real conversation, and he could have lived there, but he missed it by a mile because he was so busy. And again, as a member of a fraternity, of an NPHC fraternity, you got a lot of nerve because the Kappas, let me stop. None of us are clean in this. None in the hazing piece, none of our organizations are untouched. That's just the cold, hard fact. And that's not even NPHC organizations. That's literally all Greek organizations these days have fools in them that think it's real funny to humiliate a person, to put someone in harm's way, and then turn around and call them their brother or their sister. No organization escapes being connected in that way. And that was a real great opportunity that he missed by a mile, which kind of leads me to whether or not I even want, and this is the roughest transition ever, but I just want to leave that there because I could literally talk for hours about the real conversation that we should be having. And again, I do want that this conversation needs to be had. I appreciate that it appears that the perpetrators are being prosecuted, fired, and charges are being brought up. But you know what I don't like? The fact that, and this is not even something that I brought up, this is something that was brought to my attention by watching a TikToker, I think he's named the Baseman. He's the guy out of Louisiana who... part of his story is that he's living in a FEMA trailer, him and a number of other community members where he lived because that hurricane that came in 21 in his community wiped them completely to zero. Like, it was very devastating, more devastating than we could know. And so there's a community of folks that are still living in the FEMA trailers because it takes a while to recover from a natural disaster. And anyway, but he's very eloquent. He's got a beautiful voice. And he's always bringing something important to the forefront, and he's always got a good word. And so I was listening to him, and in the wake of the tragic killing of Tyree. And this is actually, I think I listened to him or watched this video like maybe 4 or 5 days ago. By the time you're recording this, or you're listening to this record, by the time this recording is coming out. And anyway, he said, you know, it's curious how, on the one hand, it's pretty curious how swiftly our direction was pointed in these five officers' way, or we were pointed in the direction of these five officers for weeks by the police chief and that department, right? And as time keeps ticking, after the video came out, more people, it seems like every day more people are being removed from office or fired, and charges being brought up on them. What started out as five is like 10 people now. It's the officers that victimized Tyree, and it's the ones that were standing there watching. The guy, what we're learning is that the white guy that initially cuffed him and was heard to be egging them on in the recording. It's the paramedics who did nothing, who stood idly by while he was in critical need of attention. A whole bunch of people's faces are being plastered up. And again, I say, make sure you keep them in their uniforms. Make sure you keep them in their uniforms. It's important. It's important to this conversation. It's important. Not everybody was in civilian clothes. Some of y'all was in your uniform. I need to see you in your uniform. I need to see you when you were getting that commendation. Because this is the face of a person who could sit idly by while such atrocities against an individual who defenseless individuals was being carried out against them. So anyway, this has been very interesting. I'm just curious. I'm curious to see what the leaders on the ground in Memphis are going to be talking about, and what. Hopefully that those officers and everyone that was involved will be brought to justice and be sentenced and go to prison, because they should all go there. It will not bring Tyree back, but justice needs to be served for real. Because firing is not enough, baby. I don't care. I do not care that you were fired. I don't care. I need you to go to jail. So anyway, we'll see how this thing plays out. We'll see how this thing plays out. Like I said, I'm not watching the video. I won't do that. I do not recommend that anyone else does. I know that there are some activists that are saying you do need to watch the video so that we can make sure that we're holding Memphis PD accountable. And I hear that, but you also have to protect your peace. And I have heard multiple accounts of explaining the video enough that so many that I don't need to watch it. I don't need to watch it. And so I won't. But anyway, yeah, so justice for Tyree Nichols. I will spend a few minutes talking about you people. That was my intent. I gotta take a break and get my mind right. But I'm gonna talk about you people. Yeah, in the next segment, if you're listening to my show for the first time, this intro is just whatever is on my heart to talk about. And then I go into reviewing whatever I want to review, book, movie, television show, what have you. And so I'm going to do that in the next segment. So yeah, stay tuned. Okay. You People is a 2023 film. It's labeled romance slash buddy in that genre. Runtime is 1 hour and 58 minutes. It stars Eddie Murphy as Akbar, the father of Amira, who's played by Laura London. Amira's mother is Fatima, who's played by Nia Long. Amira's love interest is Ezra, who's played by Jonah Hill. Jonah Hill's mother is Shelley, who's played by Julia Louis-Dreyfus. His father is, what's his father's name? Oh, Arnold, who's played by David Duchovny. There are, apart from these folks, the heavy hitters that I've already mentioned, there are cameos from a lot of comedians in this thing. Sam J plays Mo, Ezra's best friend. Rhea Perlman plays Bubby, Ezra's grandmother. Anthony Anderson is in here as a random barber. Elliot Gould is the guy from the Oceans franchise. Oceans 13. Excuse me, I think it's Oceans 13 when they're building that casino and Al Pacino is the bad guy. Elliot Gould is the one that they're all doing the work for. Anyway, Elliot Gould is a storied career in Hollywood. Google Elliot Gould. Dion Cole is in here being foolish. He's a relationship coach in this thing. He's just being foolish. And if there are other comedians in here, I don't know them. There's a person in here that I really... Oh, Mike Epps. Mike Epps is in here being foolish and funny. He plays Uncle EJ, Amira's uncle. Young Miami is in here. I think she's a cousin or a friend or something like that of Amira. Young Miami plays Tiffany. And Kenya Burris makes an appearance in this thing. I guess, again, your movie, your prerogative. So it was released January 20th. Director Kenya Burris, screenplay Jonah Hill and Kenya Burris, producers Jonah Hill, Kenya Burris, Kevin Misher. Production companies Misher Films and Strong Baby, distributed by Netflix. Let me give you critics' response was interesting. To say the very least, it's 5.6 out of 10 on IMDb, 42% on Rotten Tomatoes, and 8 out of 10 on IGN. And the critics' consensus, let me just give you that. With 105 reviews, it's got 42% on the tomato meters from critics. And it's got 39% an audience score from 1,000 plus ratings. And critics' consensus is this. You People has an outstanding cast and plenty of comedic potential, but mostly wasted on a picture that dithers between social commentary and romantic comedy without fully committing to either. And that is simply how I see it. This movie doesn't know what it wants to be. I think it wants to be a romantic comedy, but like a different romantic. It's like Who's Coming to Dinner, but in reverse. Sidney Poitier is not the person coming to dinner. It's Ezra. The black guy's not coming to dinner. The Jewish guy's coming to dinner this time. And it wants to focus on Ezra being accepted by Amira's family, but it doesn't quite curl over. It also tries to be super edgy because you have Eddie Murphy and Julia Louis-Dreyfus, if I'm honest. At one point, Eddie Murphy was totally blue. Like, I think that was his shtick back in the day, like just being really raw. Like, you saw his stand-up raw, right? And so You have Eddie Murphy just saying things, but saying ridiculous things, but delivering them. First off, if you're black, saying things you've heard before, delivering them in the only with perfect comedic timing that can only come from a comedic legend. That is Eddie Murphy. And then Julia Louis-Dreyfus, on the other hand, being completely ridiculous, saying, again, things you have heard from no matter what ethnicity you are, how you identify in the world, you have heard a white woman say some of the stuff that she has said. Touched your hair, a black woman's hair, said some things in a way, misused slang in all the wrong ways in her quest to try to be relatable. You've seen Veep. You've seen her. I really didn't watch. What was that show about nothing? Whatever. Seinfeld. I don't too much watch that because it just didn't. It wasn't for me. But I did watch almost every episode of Veep. Julia Louis-Dreyfus is funny. And the kind of funny, again, that only comes from a seasoned comedic legend. And so when you put these two characters, when you put these two comedians, when you assign them a role, they're gonna work. You put a plate in front of them, they're both gonna eat. Okay? The problem is, how was the meal? Do you know what I mean? Like, you serve them up, they're gonna finish. But how good was the meal? That's the question. I laughed my tail off and I cringed, and in not the right way. Not like a, oh my gosh, this is so funny, but like, oh my gosh, why is this even in here? I don't know how I feel about this film. Like, at points I don't like it, and at other points I'm like, it's not the greatest, and we know that, but like, it's entertaining. But like, I don't know. The jury's still out, but let me just give it to you. So here it is. So let me go back and give you the synopsis, and then let me break it out point by point. A new couple and their families reckon with modern love amid cultural clashes, societal expectations, and generational differences. So did you hear that description? That is what the movie intended to do. What it ended up doing in 2023 is sloppily and without much care, which is the same as sloppily, very sloppily engages in conversations that they don't give the audience a chance to grapple with. Also, there's an interesting story between Ezra and Amira that probably is worth exploring. Well, it is worth exploring. The problem is, we don't get enough time. As much as we see Amira and Ezra, we don't get enough time with them. We get a lot of time. In the beginning, the setup is these two people who are tired of dating people they're not compatible with. So let me try something new. We set up very early that Jonah is from a Jewish family and that Amira is from a Muslim family. Both of them have been set up by one of their parents with someone of the same faith, and that person is just not clicking. Both of them want to approach something different. Here's where we start to unravel a little bit. We meet Jonah, and Jonah is like in some high-paying corporate job that he hates, but he really wants to be a podcaster and wear and be a sneakerhead and talk about pop culture across from his black friend. And there's a reason why I say this, because there's a moment where you flash forward in the film and there's this getaway that happens. And all of Jonah's friends are white except for his one black friend. So there's a point where there are only three black people on there, in this group. But only one of them is actually Jonah's friend. The rest of Jonah's friends are white. And that means something, especially if Jonah is positioning himself not to be a poser. I keep saying Jonah, Ezra. Kenya and Jonah wrote Ezra to be someone who's not a poser, but of the community, a part of the culture, not of the community, but a part of the culture and an ally to the community. But like all of his, he's got a token black friend and the rest of his friends are white. Now you could argue that this is their first time stepping out and stepping out. But in Jonah's perspective, he has a podcast with his one black friend talking about pop culture and everything, right? Sneaker culture is not just for black people. Sneaker culture is for all cultures. But for you to be, I guess my problem, my frustration with him only having one black friend is we spend a lot of time talking about how Akbar, Amira's daddy Akbar, played by Eddie Murphy, is giving Ezra a hard way to go. But as weird and off-putting as Akbar's approach is, his concerns are well placed. What blackness do you have in your life except your one black friend, Ezra? And that's why I say that. I guess I don't expect Jonah to have that perspective, but like Kenya Burris, who's just producing mass producing content about the nuances of blackness and black culture, biracial identity, Black people not being a monolith, us just not being a monolith, right? And you miss this. This is something pretty doggone important, I would think, that you would need to have in the conversation. So we meet Jonah, and we know all about Jonah, that he's just really trying to find his soulmate who could really get him and really just encourage him and be someone that he could just love and dote on. I will say this before I go any further. It was enjoyable. I actually, to see someone in the person of Ezra, played by Jonah Hill, who is not your typical hunky, so what, whatever, but an accomplished, centered person whose heart shows through and is super sweet and funny and lovable. That is enjoyable to see as a romantic interest to a person like Amira, played by Laura London, who is extremely beautiful. And seeing her just be naturally beautiful without appearing as if she's dressed for a male point of view or to be sexualized in any way. She's beautiful naturally. We see her wrap her hair at night because that's real. We see her walking around in slides because that's real. We see her fashionable. We see her not so fashionable. We see complexity to her. Unfortunately, we don't see behind that. We don't see anything behind that. And that's my frustration. For as much as we see Amira, we don't see enough of her. We don't learn enough of her. What else do I want to say? The way that they use David Duchovny and Nia Long is frustrating because they're literally like just the spouses of Akbar and Shelley. At one point, I think it's totally wasted, but it's hilarious. One of the funniest points in this whole film is when Amira goes to dinner over Ezra's parents, Shelley and Arnold's house. And Shelley says something completely ridiculous. She's about to get kicked off saying ridiculous stuff. And Ezra takes Shelley to the bathroom because he's trying to check his mama. Meanwhile, Amira is in the living room with Arnold and Ezra's sister. And before Shelley is carted off by Ezra, Arnold starts rapping lyrics or something again. So Shelley's being ridiculous, but trying to relate. and Arnold is being ridiculous, not as ridiculous as Shelley, but also still trying to relate. And the way that he chooses to relate to Amira is start talking about rappers. And his favorite rapper that he lands on is Xzibit. I don't know how we got to Xzibit, but that's just how we got there. And so anyway, so we leave Arnold's Amira and Ezra's sister to kind of just chat and mingle. Ezra's sister is cool, right? Like, she's younger, so she recognizes how cringy this whole situation is. And I think we're meant to know that she's a lesbian and that she thinks that Amira is super gorgeous because freaking Lord London is gorgeous. Moving on. And so anyway, so the three of them are meant to just hang out while Ezra checks Shelley. Ezra and Shelley come back after Ezra checked her, and they come back to Arnold playing Ordinary People on their piano. On Arnold's piano, because I think he's like in the music business or something like that. And he's singing Ordinary People very badly. It's hilarious. It's hilarious. And I was okay. I was all right. We have the same setup with Akbar and Fatima, played by Nia Long, Amira's parents. And Amira's brother is funny, and a good companion to Eddie Murphy. But like, how can you not be funny when you are in a scene with Eddie Murphy? It's hard. And so there's a moment where was it at the dinner? Oh, I think the dinner was all right. There was another moment. Let me talk about the funny moments. There was a moment where Akbar, because Ezra had, they were going head toward marriage. Ezra and Amira were headed towards marriage. And, you know, they were engaged. And so Akbar hangs out with Ezra. And they're in the car, and I guess they're traveling somewhere. And what did I want to say? Somehow or another, the Jay-Z, an artist that we shall not name, but was from Chicago, backpack rapper. Everybody loved him when he first came out. I have shared that he was my favorite rapper. One of my favorite rappers that really resonated with me in college. That person, you know who I'm talking about. There's a song where they're talking about being in Paris. It's a rap song. You know the song I'm talking about. I'm not thinking to say it. And here's the funny part. So, because Akbar is trolling Ezra, the song comes on. And Ezra, who's very much still trying to get on Akbar's good side, like, vibes out to the song, is trying to find commonality to him. And Akbar, again, because he's trolling Ezra, says, "What's the name of the song?" And for like 5 minutes, Ezra dances around naming the song. I flat out says, "I don't know the name of this song." And Akbar baits him and says, "Oh, somebody's in Paris. Who's in Paris?" Trying to get Ezra to say it. And Ezra's like, "I just don't know. You know, I never actually ever heard the name of the song." Their banter is hilarious. Jonah Hill is funny anyway. But like, again, if you are in a scene with Eddie Murphy, how can you not be funny? How can you not be funny? And so anyway, oh boy. So that was hilarious. There's a point where Mike Epps, who I find just eternally funny, comes in as Amira's uncle and does something stupid, and it's hilarious because it's you know Mike Epps, you know his style. Rhea Perlman is in there and says something funny. Elliot Gould, I think they're at the temple or something like that. They're at Shelley and Arnold's, I guess, the family temple. And it's like a Jewish holiday. I can't remember the holiday, or it was a high. Not a high holiday. Or was it? I think it was like a high holiday. Anyway, And they're sitting literally in the middle of the service, okay? The rabbi's at the dais, all right? Giving a sermon. And they're having this whole conversation with a ton of people around them, right? And just funny stuff is happening. And Rhea Perlman, I can't remember what she says, but she's just funny. Rhea Perlman's husband, you know, it's the guy that's, that plays, the short guy that's always in, what's it called? Always Sunny in Philadelphia or whatever. I cannot remember his name, but Danny DeVito. Rhea Perlman is Danny DeVito, I think, right? Yeah, Rhea Perlman is Danny DeVito's wife. I've always known that they were both funny. Goes without saying. Very funny. And so I think whatever, I don't even remember what she did, but it was whatever she said, it was something funny and I loved it. Again, there are funny moments in this film. But I don't believe, it's hard for me to believe that someone in the person of Ezra, who so madly falls in love with Amira, and turns out they show him having game. And Amira, who is so tired of not being fooled with, I just can't believe that these two people come together and neither one of them sit their families down and give them ultimatums. That never happens. There's never a point in this film where their love overcomes all of the struggles. It's literally about because Julia Louis-Dreyfus are so strong, Eddie Murphy are so strong and so present. The film, which is supposed to be about Ezra and Amira's love, ends up being about Akbar and Shelley's attempts to sabotage the relationship in Shelley's case, without meaning to, in Akbar's case, on purpose. And so in the process, bring up a lot of socioeconomic or sociopolitical conversations. Race and ethnicity is a part of this conversation. A lot. Lots of jokes around it. Wasted. It's a waste of time, man. It feels like a waste of time. It feels like if you could have just settled on the one, if you wanted this to be a romantic comedy, there are a number of different ways we could have got, like, again, focus on the love, focus on Ezra and Joan. What Ezra and Joan and Amira could have done was run off, and the story could have been about Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Eddie Murphy being total opposites, and David Duchovny, David Duchovny and Nia Long having more screen time to be in support of them as they're going on this journey to find Ezra and Amira. That would have been a better film than what we got here. They stayed in LA the entire time. We saw their bedrooms. We saw their the family's homes. We saw the synagogue. We never saw the mosque, I don't believe. We never saw Akbar and Fatima's mosque. We saw Vegas. We saw strip clubs, or at least a club where there were dancers. We never really saw more. We know that Amira had a life, that she had dreams, and that she had goals. She was trying to just move into, trying to advance her career. We saw Jonah leave his, but we didn't learn more about them. And that's a missed opportunity. You were so eager. Kenya Burris was so eager, and Jonah were so eager to get these jokes off, to get these points out, that what they ended up making is like three films squished into one. And so ultimately, I don't like this film, despite my love for Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Eddie Murphy, and for how cute, to be honest with you, how cute of a couple. Even though it was weird at first, it was weird. And some of the ways that they engaged with each other was a little, I don't think Lauren London is a big actress. And so that kind of showed through a little bit. Her novice-ness in acting showed through a little bit. But when we were meant to believe that they were a fully formed couple, I liked them. They were cute. Like, they were cute. It took some getting used to, and I'm reading the top lines, and I know you've seen this. Here's a headline, Vulture. Laura London wasn't sure about you people at first, either. I mean, and for good reason. Times of Israel, well, let me come back to the Times of Israel. Harper's Bazaar. Laura London knows she and Jonah Hill don't make the most believable couple, because they don't. After a while, you stop fighting your disbelief, and you just let it be, but they don't. She is way beautiful. I could see Jonah with a black girl, but like, not Laura London. Come on. It's Laura London. Anyway, but you stop fighting it after a while. But here's the one that I think there's a point here. It's the Times of Israel. Critics pan painful portrayal of Jews in race relations rom-com, you people. Shoot, it's Jews and it's Muslims, because like, there's a whole point where there's a question as to what flavor, for lack of a better term, flavor of Muslim Akbar and Fatima are. And it's like a blip of a conversation where I think Ezra asked, no, not Ezra. Amira lies and says that Ezra is actually not a Jewish person, but that she's dating, he's not white. I'm dating a Muslim, before she's ready to tell Akbar, her daddy, that she's dating a white man. She says he's Muslim. And Akbar asks, Sunni or nation? That is a whole conversation that they didn't even bother to go into. They're Sunni, Muslim, or Nation of Islam. That's a whole conversation. Like a whole conversation. Most people's introduction to Nation of Islam is literally either jokes or the film Malcolm X. Some people don't even understand because of their proximity. Like, I've learned it, living in Baltimore, the ways that I've understood how Judaism is practiced and the ways that I understood Islam being practiced has changed dramatically just living in Baltimore, because I have engaged with people who practice both of those religions in myriad ways. And so you cannot just throw out nation or Sunni with no real explanation. They talk about it for like less than a minute and then they move on. It's like a part of the joke. Because again, Amira's lying about who she's dating. And that's what I'm saying. It's reckless. It's reckless all the way around. There's a whole conversation about progressive Judaism and the understanding of what does observant mean. Like, there's a lot of conversations. There's a lot of conversations to be had here that they're just missing, especially when you're talking about religion. But when we look here, none of these folks appear to be super observant in their religion. So why were we bringing this up as a fodder? Like, there's a whole conversation. I'm gonna give this away. Akbar wears a kufi that it was given to him from, Louis Farrakhan, which is a very polarizing figure. And it's used as a joke. The whole conversation is used as a joke. I'm not going to talk about Louis Farrakhan or that's not my conversation. I'm neither Muslim nor Jewish. There's complex conversations that are being brought up in this film with no care at all. And it's foolish. It's foolish and reckless. And all for what? For what? I still don't know why we were here. What was the point of this film? It's one of those, like conservatives say, oh, those libtards are, white conservatives, those libtards are the liberal agenda. This feels like a freaking liberal agenda film. I agree. It feels like a freaking liberal agenda film. Like somebody who just wanted to put so much in there. You missed the point by a mile. And so what are we doing this for? Again, you misuse Eddie Murphy and Julia Louis-Dreyfus and all the great comedians. Elliot Gould, you use him in this way? Mike Epps, who's always going to deliver, you use him in this way? Wasted energy. Anyway, but there are moments in here that are cute, but I don't like this film. But there are moments in here that are cute, I'll give you that. So anyway, that's kind of where I see this whole thing. In the context, in the day that we're in, we could have did better than this. And I bet you they got boo-hooed. Wait a minute, what was the budget on this thing? Do I even know? Of course you don't see a budget because why? Listen, I'm seeing some review from somewhere where it's saying 2.6 out of 2,000, I think this is Google, 2.6 out of 2,658 reviews. That's how it's 2.6 stars. And then somebody that gave it 5 stars. And to be fair, let me read what they said. So love the movie and would recommend all walks of life to watch. That was a weird statement there. It hits home a fundamental wound. What? It hits home a fundamental wound in this country using race and religion. Two taboo social discourse topics and gives perspective that a typical person may not know if you're direct. And see, that goes into my point. You sit up here talking about Sunni and nation with no explanation. What, you think everybody just gonna Google it after? It was such a blip, somebody might have missed it. Anyway, let me continue. Two taboo social discourse topics and gives perspective that a typical person may not know if you're not directly impacted by racial or minority disparities. The parents of, it's Amira, not Amora, and Ezra, I see applied beyond the infamous topics. What? Proposed as, for example, being a second generation immigrant, I see very similar characteristics when entering marriage with anyone outside of your culture or family tradition. Okay, so I hear which they're trying to go. They're trying to make an analogy between this conversation and how radically different someone from two different cultures, religious cultures, are from people who are from different ethnic cultures. I hear where they're trying to go. Even that is a different conversation. Let me continue. The cast was great and well thought through on bringing a movie that would help. The cast was great and well thought through on bringing a movie that will help facilitate conversations on how deep the trauma of what particular minorities experience and the very real experience how it impacts love, work, family, and life in general. One scene I enjoyed with inner sadness was Amira preparing for a job that she most likely was overqualified for. Ooh, I missed that. You're right. And did not get, and her fiance thinking helping would be, to work a connection. This scene was so well done and underrated on the historical privilege white people have and don't even realize it's privilege to helping them achieve their accomplishments. Reading the comments here, some I agree or disagree, but in all love the dialogue that it is promoting in this country. Because until we as Americans of all backgrounds start to talk to one another and face the fears of social awkwardness, we will never get past this invisible but very physical. Oh my God, this is long. A barrier between racial disparities in America. I commend all the actors, writers, and producers that gave another outlet to talk about this much needed dialogue and charm and crude humor to really make it an enjoyable film. I hear well-intentioned posts, though it may be. This was reckless because in all of the tomfoolery in this film, that was another point that was good that I missed. Jonah wanted to pull strings. Amira wanted to get it on her own, and there was a conversation to be had there. Not only white people have strings, and I think that's what I wanted to say, I think it's reckless to assume that only white people have strings. Do you know how many influential black folks that I know that can pull strings for me right now? So let's not have that conversation. Instead, let's concentrate on the fact that Amira was overqualified for a job, but still had to prepare because there was a real possibility she wasn't going to get it because of who she was. Also, let's jump to the interview that Amira had for that job, where she described Howard at HBCU, one of the most famous historically black colleges or universities in the whole United States, how she described Howard as the Harvard, the black Harvard, and how the white faces across the table from her who were interviewing her, one of them had on both of them had on a Harvard shirt, and their face was, they were crestfallen. Because you know how some people who've gone to Ivy League schools are about their universities being compared to anyone else. And here's the reminder, Howard exists because we couldn't go to Harvard. You wouldn't let us in. So we created our own. She described Howard as the Harvard, the black Harvard, because that was what it was meant to be. Whether or not it actually worked out in some people's views, it's irrelevant to the conversation. Conversation is, you didn't put respect on Howard's name. You didn't put respect on Amira's credentials. And she didn't get a job she should have had in space. She probably should have had them people that was interviewing her jobs, one of their jobs. That's how qualified she was. That was a conversation that needed to be explored. Not devolve it into a conversation about, oh, you just want to use your connections to get me a job. I want to get it on my own. It was very weird. I'm sure there was more. I'm not going into these comments. There's 1,370 comments. I'm not going in. I know I was talking to my coworker the other day. I asked her if she enjoyed the film. She said she loved it. She agreed that it wasn't going to win any awards, but it was an enjoyable film for what it is. So I do agree. I imagine there's people with a certain perspective that love this film. I think this film is reckless. I think that Kenya Burris targets a particular demographic of folks who want a little bit of political commentary, but not too much that it's not palatable. And here's the thing, not too much. Because, which sounds ridiculous, because they say some very crude things, some very real things, some very wild racist things in this film, but they don't go far enough in them. Shelley don't get enough credit. Akbar don't either. Again, we don't even understand Arnold and Fatima's role in this whole thing, apart from them being spouses to Shelley and Akbar. I told you what I would have done if I had the opportunity. But again, I don't have the resources. I'm not a filmmaker. I did not go to film school. I don't have any of this, the background to back any of my notions up. I just read a lot of good written, well-written books. And I guarantee you, Justina Ireland would have wrote that. What I described, she would have wrote something similar. Mind you, she'd have probably put zombies in it, but that's not the point. All right. Octavia Butler would have made it a dystopian film, a dystopian book, but not my point. She would have got there. So anyway, it's entertaining. I think I've pretty well told you the whole film. I think you kind of know how things go, but I did not ruin all of the good parts. I did tease out a lot of information, but I didn't ruin it for you. If you still want to watch it. That said, I totally understand if you do not. Anyway, I don't actually want to talk about this film anymore because I watched it the one time, and while there were beautiful scenes in there, I'm not watching this thing again. No, thank you. But I would love to hear what y'all think about it and why I should probably give it another shot, perhaps. Should I give it another shot? I don't know. I'm open. I just feel a way. but maybe I'm being too critical. Who knows? Anyway, let me tell you this. I'm going to review something else next week, but I just need to let you know. The Physical 100 on Netflix, if you're not watching it, you should be watching it because, number one, competition. That's my jam. I enjoy competition shows, but my dear, in your quest to see the winners, you will just see lots of eye candy. It's great. Anyway, but also some of these tasks are ridiculous and it do kind of open up like Squid Games. It does very much give you Squid Games in the very beginning and then it moves into just who can survive sort of thing. Anyway, yeah, there's some very beautiful people on that thing. And believe it or not, one of the most beautiful on there, I believe, is the oldest one on there. I'm talking about he came out in a Hunter Green suit. Okay. Everybody else trying to be cute, trying to do this and that. But he came out in a Hunter Green suit with some glasses, with some cold-blooded glasses and said, you know I look good, so why don't you go ahead and feast your eyes? And he did, to me, look real good. Anyway, and he'd be holding his own on this thing too. Anyhow, all right, but that's enough. I will leave it there. This episode is super long. Maybe not super long, but long enough. Anyway, thank you for listening. If this is your first time listening, please rate or review this thing. 4 or 5 stars or better, or 4 or 5 stars. Leave me a review. If it's positive, I'll read it. You're welcome to leave me a message and I'll engage with it. Yeah. So take care of yourself. Hopefully I talked you through whatever project you were doing or got you in the spirit to go do whatever you didn't want to do before. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you for sharing this with somebody you think might dig it. Thank you. And take care.